All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're going to be debating a little bit who's the greatest tight end of all time, Tony Gonzalez versus Rob Gronkowski, as well as sort of parsing through some of Dan Quinn's comments today at the NFL Owners Meeting.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we are going to sort of discuss, debate a little bit, present both sides of the argument of who's the greatest tight end of all time, given that Rob Gronkowski decided to retire over the weekend. I've seen other people sort of talking about this online. I've seen other Locked On podcasts debating this, looking at some of their other great tight ends for their respective teams and sort of saying who stacks up as the GOAT tight end, Gronk or Gates. And now we're going to do it with Gronk versus Tony Gonzalez, as well as get in later a little bit about sort of what we heard from Dan Quinn today, at least some of the sound bites we heard from him today in regard to the Falcons offseason, in regard to their draft plans, what to expect in 2019. And so we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. But let's jump into the Gronk versus Tony Gonzalez debate. Who's the GOAT? I'll be honest with you, up front with you, I don't really have a particular take. If you ask me, you know, I probably side with Rob Gronkowski. Surprise, surprise. You know, I think that's only changed in the last year or so. I feel like, you know, I think if you want to make a case for Tony Gonzalez, I think you have a very valid case. I think, you know, the strong case for Tony Gonzalez is just pure longevity to play at a high level, be a top five tight end in the league for, you know, what was it, 14, 17 seasons? Something ridiculous like that. Yeah, 17 seasons. In comparison to Gronk, who only played 9 seasons. I think, you know, the argument in favor of Gronk, and I think the argument that I'll at least present today in this regard is sort of, I think the case for Gronk is that he held the championship belt, so to speak, for the tight end position for a much longer period of time than really anybody in at least the last 30 or so years. And I would sort of look at it and, you know, judging this and basing this purely off of who has the most all pros under their belt, looking at the primarily the Associated Press, but also sort of factoring in the Pro Football Writers Association, as well as the Sporting News and whatnot. So from 1993 to 1998, Shannon Sharpe probably held the belt. He was either a first-team or second-team AP All-Pro in 5 out of those 6 seasons. Then Tony Gonzalez sort of took the belt in 1999 and held on to it through 2003, and he went 5 straight years as being a first- or second-team All-Pro. Then Antonio Gates sort of took the belt for 3 years from 04 to 06. He was an All-Pro all 3 of those years, first team over Tony Gonzalez. Then I think there's about 4 years where it's hard to sort of pick who's the champion, who's the clear-cut championship belt holder. But I think Jason Witten probably gets the nudge out of those 4 years from 2007 to 2010. He was an AP All-Pro for 3 out of those 4 years. And then starting in 2011, I think Gronk sort of held the belt. And, you know, over the next 7 years, I think was sort of the belt holder. I think currently you would say Travis Kelce is the belt holder. And I think you can sort of, you can make an argument that maybe Kelce took over in 2016, a little bit earlier than that. But I think if you're making that argument, you're really basing it off of the fact that in 2016, Gronk got hurt that year. But you look at those 7 seasons where Gronk held the belt, he made the AP All-Pro 4 out of those 7 years. And you say, well, he only made it 4 out of those 7 years. How can you say he held the belt that long? Well, the 3 years he didn't make it, he got hurt those years. And when you look at sort of the time during the point in the season where he actually was healthy and playing, he was by far and away in all 3 of those years the best tight end in the league. He was the most productive tight end in the league and when looking at yards and touchdowns and whatnot. And so he was dominating the competition, then, you know, missed significant chunks of those years and, you know, wound up not being voted to the AP. I think he made the Pro Football Writers All-Pro. It's still one of those years as well. So I think, you know, that's really the case for Gronk, that you look at his peak, that he was the best tight end in the league for the longest period of time, really over the last 30 years. And I think that's really the case. He was a dominant player at his peak when he wasn't injured, dealing with injuries and even coming off of those injuries in several of those years. He still was a dominant player. So I think that's why Gronk gets all the love. But I think Tony Gonzalez certainly deserves, you know, much adoration. And again, you know, if you feel like Tony's longevity is what gives him the deciding vote in this debate, I'm not going to sit here and fight you on it. I imagine you're also the type of person that thinks Emmitt Smith is better than Barry Sanders, which is, you know, it's an opinion. I don't think it's a popular opinion, not certainly the consensus opinion, but I think that's kind of really the situation here. So, you know, Tony had a great career, certainly a Hall of Fame career, first ballot Hall of Famer. In terms of the body of work, Tony, again, you know, throughout those years, really did great work. I think the thing, the also thing that you would say in favor of Tony, though, is that he kind of was held back a little bit by the quarterback play in Kansas City. And you see this real big spike in his production, particularly like I looked it up on third downs when he was in Atlanta versus when he was in Kansas City. He was way more productive third down receiver in Atlanta than he was in Kansas City. And that probably is largely owed to the quarterback play. And Gronk, you know, gets a little bit of a boost, just a tiny one, teensy weensy, from playing with Tom Brady, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. But I think you can also make a, you know, there's evidence to suggest that Gronk also enhanced Brady to a certain extent. Not to sit here and be like, Tom Brady owes all his success to Rob Gronkowski. Clearly, that's not the truth. But I do think Brady was a much better quarterback. There is clear evidence to suggest that Brady was a much better quarterback, particularly over the last, you know, 7-8 years when Gronk was on the field and when he was not on the field. And Gronk, you know, for a lot of, was really sort of the Patriots Julio version of Julio Jones, where, you know, I always say like Julio's the sun when it comes to his role and value in the Falcons offense and everything revolves around him. And Gronk was kind of the same way with the Patriots. And that's pretty rare. And that wasn't really necessarily the case with Tony Gonzalez outside of maybe those prime years early on in his career. I think the other thing you can say in favor of Gronk in this debate, again, I'm just making the argument. I'm not, again, not necessarily saying this is definitively, this is the truth. And if you disagree with me, you're a crazy person. I've discussed in previous episodes for many years that, you know, the whole rankings debates that people like to get in and fight over, to me, is just kind of a waste of time. If you like Gronk, if you like Gonzo, whatever. But I think the case that you would make if you're making the case for Gronk is the quality of competition during Gronk's prime was much better than the quality of competition during Tony Gonzalez's prime. Because when you look at the sort of tight ends that were also sort of, you know, when Gonzo was, you know, being the first team All-Pro, look at the guys who were like second team All-Pros. It wasn't necessarily a who's who of great tight ends. It was guys like Frank Wycheck and Ernie Conwell. I think Wesley Walls made it 1 year. I think Todd Heap made it 1 year. But then when you look at Gronk, it was like Jimmy Graham, Greg Olsen, Vernon Davis, Travis Kelce. So I feel like, you know, the quality, like Tony Gonzalez was a dominant tight end in an era during that, at least during that 4 year, you know, that 5 year run, where there wasn't a lot of elite tight ends. It was like the end of Shannon Sharpe's tenure, you know, Frank Wycheck, Marcus Pollard, Freddie Jones, Kyle Brady, the end of Wesley Walls, you know, Jay Riemersma, like Chad Lewis, like these weren't the who's who of great tight ends. Now, compared to Gronk, you got Graham and Olsen and Witten, Delaney Walker, Antonio Gates, Jerry Cook, Vernon Davis, Kelce, Martellus Bennett. I think just, you know, the fact that Gronk sort of was the cream that rose to the top during that time where there's a much better tight ends in the NFL collectively over the last decade than there were, I would argue, over the previous decade, I think also gives sort of Gronk an edge. So, you know, use whatever you need to use in order to, you know, make your cases. I tried to present both arguments, but obviously I think, you know, as I said at the top, I think I favor Gronk a little bit more in this debate and whatnot. And again, it doesn't diminish Tony Gonzalez's career in Atlanta or Kansas City or in the NFL. But, you know, I think I would probably put him at 2 in the all-time tight ends rankings list if it was up to me. But there you have it, guys. We'll come back and talk about sort of Dan Quinn's comments during the NFL owners meeting. But before we get there, I want you guys to remember that you can get the Locked On Falcons podcast or any daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to your favorite Locked On podcast, your team every day. So looking sort of specifically at some of the comments that jumped out to me about what Dan Quinn said is, you know, the first thing that he said that jumped out to me was, and this is per, you know, Kelsey Conway, who writes for an employee of the Atlanta Falcons, writes for AtlantaFalcons.com. And, you know, she tweeted out that Dan Quinn said that adding depth at strong safety, defensive end, and cornerback is the focus for the team right now. So I think that was an interesting comment. Obviously, context matters. Don't know exactly the context that Dan Quinn was referring to those positions and how, you know, what the focus right now is. Does that mean this is what the team sort of looks at as their biggest draft priorities? Is this something that maybe the Falcons are focused on right now as something that they want to address prior to the draft, potentially in free agency, and maybe get some options at one or all three of those spots pre-draft? I don't know the exact context, but let's just take it at face value and assume that that's sort of the three spots on the roster the Falcons sort of look at currently that are they're in their eyes the most problematic. We'll take those positions one at a time. Let's start off with strong safety. The Falcons continue to disrespect my man, Sherrod Neesman. You know, I certainly understand the team's concern about Keanu Neal coming off of his ACL injury and the fact that strong safety was a major question mark on the team throughout most of the 2018 season, but I felt like that question mark kind of went away, turned into a period, whatever you want to say, by the end of the season, over the last month of the season, because I thought Neesman played exceptionally well over the last four or five games of the year, and I think you could argue that he was one of the five or six best defensive players on the team during that stretch of games. And so it's odd to me a little bit that this team, you know, for the second consecutive offseason seems unwilling to sort of commit to Sherrod Neesman. Last offseason, we talked about it before, where he was an exclusive rights free agent. The team decided not to tender him, letting him be able to walk free for really no reason, similar to what they did with Marvin Hall. And he wound up landing in New Orleans, spent training camp with the Saints, got cut, wound up coming back to Atlanta. But it seems like the Falcons still are like, yeah, we don't have full confidence in Sherrod Neesman. I'm baffled by that because, for me at least, when he plays on the field, you like the results that you see. You're not looking at Sherrod Neesman and being like, oh man, this guy's going to be a starter for another team one day. But as far as backup strong safety play goes, I don't see why or how the Falcons think they're going to get significantly better from that position without having to use, you know, a top three or four round draft pick on that position. I think he's going to be significantly better, or at least significantly better in the near immediate future than what the equivalent of a fourth, fifth, or sixth round pick is going to be at that position. So, you know, I know a lot of people are like, well, they could move Neesman to free safety. I don't think that position fits Neesman at all. I think, you know, as far as his instincts and awareness and zone go, which is critical when you're going to play that single high safety in this scheme, isn't good enough to really trust him in that role. I think he's much better covering tight ends, as he showed last year. I thought he played well against the run down the stretch, which is one of the reasons why his play improved in December, was because you didn't see as many missed tackles at the end of the season as you saw earlier in the season. And so he became a much more consistent force when he was asked to play in the box down the stretch towards the end of the season. So that's interesting to me. The Falcons, one of the other things that Dan Quinn commented on was sort of still talking about DeMonte Casey as an option at free safety. So, you know, if that's the case, that sort of leads us to the next position, which is cornerback. We all know that cornerback is going to be a need. I personally sort of see the Falcons needing the priority at that position is getting an outside corner that can handle speed. Oliver's more geared towards handling size. And, the fact that Trufant isn't getting, you know, is approaching 30 years old, and having him being asked to match up against these, you know, deep threats and these vertical threats that can run these, you know, sub 4.440s probably isn't necessarily the best way to utilize him in the twilight of his career, you know, particularly when you got guys like T.Y. Hilton and Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks and Tyler Lockett and DeSean Jackson and Marquise Goodwin and D.J. Moore and Tre'Quan Smith, all these fast wide receivers. Asking Trufant, you know, he'll be 29, I think, when the season starts, you know, asking him to basically be stuck covering these guys all game long and chasing them all over the field, I don't think is necessarily the best usage. And should he get injured, you don't really have another option on your team that can do that, because you know Bleedy Ray Wilson's not going to do that. That's not really Oliver's forte. So you need to get a backup that can sort of at least hold his own against some of these fast guys. So a fast outside corner, I think, is the priority there. You know, because again, I emphasize outside because I think Kazee has better speed as well, but I think you're asking Kazee to play in the slot. But I also wonder, you know, if the Falcons are going to continue to dabble with Kazee as a free safety, potentially in the event that Ricardo Allen is slow on his recovery. Does that also indicate that the Falcons are looking more at the slot corner, the nickel cornerback, as the priority at this cornerback position? Or is it a situation where the Falcons will try to get an outside corner and a slot corner and wind up drafting two cornerbacks as opposed to the one that I think we've all automatically assumed was going to happen, but maybe the Falcons could wind up using two out of their first four or five picks on the cornerback position. And that'll be interesting. You know, it still raises questions of why the Falcons got rid of Brian Poole, if that's the case. If they're still looking at a slot cornerback, you know, I would argue that Poole could have been an option for you at the safety position if you wanted to move guys around again, because I think free safety is a bigger issue than strong safety. But Poole did dabble as a strong safety last year, has the physicality that can sort of hold his own in the box, potentially as a strong safety if push came to shove. But, you know, I feel like certainly could fill the spot as the free safety, given some of his ability in zone coverage. So I'll be sort of curious what the Falcons' plan is, what the ultimate result is come draft day with how they address the cornerback position. But I still feel like, you know, they could have killed two birds with one stone, or at least very much injured two birds with one stone by retaining Brian Poole. So, you know, the last position obviously is the defensive end. That's no surprise. We've talked about that a number of times. You know, I've mentioned a couple of times that I felt like, you know, for me at least, the Falcons' priority was the best pass rusher. It wasn't really about edge versus D tackle. But it also sort of looks at that. I think when you look at the situation where Beasley's going into a contract year and probably is not going to be back next offseason, and you look at the possibility and likelihood, and some other comments by Dan Quinn suggested this, hints at this, that the Falcons are going to really sort of feature their NASCAR package, which is going to have tack play inside at the D-tackle position and sort of rotating with Jack Crawford beside Grady Jarrett at that D-tackle position, then, you know, getting another edge rusher probably is going to be a bigger priority than necessarily getting a D-tackle. So that will be sort of interesting if that does come to fruition. And I know we did a podcast earlier this week where I had a mock draft where I had the Falcons take an offensive tackle with their first round pick. And as I explained on that episode, it wasn't necessarily because I think that's the most likely pick that the Falcons, if you push me to the edge of a cliff. I don't like using the term gun to my head. I just don't like that term. But, you know, the equivalent of that, and you ask me what is the most likely pick for the Falcons, I do think it's a DN. I think I've said as much a couple of times on this podcast over the last month or so. So we'll have to see. But again, as I've said a number of times as well, it depends on who's there. Because I think that short list of DN candidates that the Falcons would realistically draft at pick 14, I think is relatively short. So we'll have to see how that goes. We'll wrap things up by talking a little bit about some of the other things coming at owners meeting, like the league rules, as well as something also I overlooked potentially at the Falcons fullback position, you know, this on Locked On Fullbacks podcast. But before we get there, I do want to let you guys know that Major League Baseball is back. And the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered. Check out a multitude of new daily podcasts devoted to your favorite baseball teams, including the Locked On Braves podcast with new host Dylan Short on whatever platform you get your Locked On podcast, including the new Himalaya app, your team every day. So, you know, one of the things that Dan Quinn mentioned in one of the talking points is he talked about Luke Stocker playing a little bit, having that versatility to play some fullback. And I apologize, guys. That was something I completely overlooked when talking about the Luke Stocker signing and talking about the Falcons tight end position. I was completely unaware of, I actually had to look this up today before jumping on here. But I was actually oblivious to how much time Luke Stocker played as a fullback. Particularly with the Titans the last couple of years, over the last two seasons. And, you know, you look back at his time in Tampa Bay in 2017, as well as in Tennessee that season and this past season, about a third of his snaps, according to Pro Football Focus, came when he was lined up in the backfield. So that's, you know, that's a significant number. So he really is sort of that, you know, we talked about Saubert and we talked about whether the Falcons would target a sort of a hybrid H-back type of guy. But, you know, clearly Luke Stocker can perform in that role. And I'll go back and watch some film of him, particularly in Tennessee, to see how well he handled those duties. That's just something I overlooked. I just, you know, when we signed Luke Stocker, like, yeah, he's a good blocking tight end. I remember him from his days in Tampa Bay. He's the type of guy that could, you know, hold his own against defensive ends. And that's sort of traditionally what you look for as an inline tight end. So it was really sort of like, yeah, no need to really go back and study Luke Stocker film. But that was something I overlooked. And so, you know, as a tried and true host of the Locked On Fullbacks podcast, I will leave no stone unturned when it comes to fully evaluating and appreciating all the potential fullback options on the team. So it does go back to sort of what we talked about in light of the Luke Stocker signing, in light of the Logan Paulson signing, that the Falcons still could be looking at tight end when Dan Quinn was asked about sort of what positions he's excited for in this draft. He, you know, he's mentioned a number of times that he's really liked some of the tight ends. So I think the Falcons are still in the market for drafting a tight end, whether that's an H-back type, like a Trevon Wesco, or whether that's an inline blocker like an Isaac Nada. I still think that's an option, probably potentially in round five. So maybe our guy at ESPN, Von McClure, will still wind up being right on that prediction that he had coming out of the combine, where the Falcons are going to maybe target a tight end in round four or five. So, yeah, I think that's still on the table, particularly if the team sort of envisions Stocker potentially competing at that fullback position, pushing Ricky Ortiz for that job. And I think, again, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Falcons are locked in and taking the tight end in this draft, but I think if the right guy, if the guy that they like, a guy they have a pretty good grade on, is available sometime on day three, I think we'll see the Falcons sort of pull the trigger on that guy. And if not, then they'll be content with the four guys they got, plus Ricky Ortiz, and between, you know, those five guys, keeping the four, possibly five best guys on the roster and let them compete in training camp. So, yeah, we'll have to see. You know, the last little tidbit is, you know, we got some new rules, you know, and that's one of the things that comes out of the owners' meeting. I think they're still voting on challenging pass interference, you know, the infamous Saints-Rams game and the NFC Championship game and whatnot. But, you know, in that call, and obviously Sean Payton, and I'm sure a lot of people in the state of Louisiana are sort of championing, you know, this rule change, and we'll have to see if it gets passed. As far as I know, as I'm recording this, it hasn't been. But the one rule change that has been passed is that the league has completely eliminated all blindside blocks, which, you know, I think was, again, a focus on player safety. One of the things that came out in light of this is that a third of all concussions that occurred on, I think, punt returns came off of blindside blocks. So it's, you know, it's interesting to me because I've talked about this a number of times on the podcast, but the league keeps sort of like marginalizing the return game and being like, it's so dangerous and it's player safety. And like, for me, at least, you know, being the radical that I am, I'm just like we're on this path to them just getting rid of the return game, but like they don't want to jump, you know. I guess that's one bridge too far, I guess, for them to make that leap. That I think we're on the path to getting there. It just, the league is just sort of slowly sort of being like, yeah, return, like, they, you know, they got all the kick, they basically formalized the kickoff rules from last year as well, but they basically made it so that, you know, tried to their best to minimize how often you return kickoffs with the rules last year. And so, you know, I don't, I sitting here today, how getting rid of blindside blocks is going to help or hurt punt returns, I have no idea. I mean, I guess if you're not getting these hellacious crackback blocks, guys are going to be more likely to make tackles. So punt returns, I guess, probably, I mean, I don't know. Again, I guess they're not going to be as effective. So, you know, it just sort of adds more to sort of, I guess, if that's the takeaway, and maybe you guys have a different opinion on it, but, you know, it just adds more fuel to the fire of how sort of it's a throwaway position at this point in time, even more so than fullback position. You know, I'll never truly abandon the fullback position. You know, I still think it has value in this league, but I just kind of feel like, you know, teams that are investing resources in their return game, while, you know, not to sit here and say it's inconsequential, but it is one of those things where I just don't feel like that's the best use of your resources. But yet the Falcons seem like they're a team that's poised to do that. So, you know, we reserve the right to complain about a future Falcons draft pick or to be like, hey, you know what? This guy is actually a really talented returner and he's the exception to the rule as opposed to the norm, I guess. But yeah, there you have it, guys. I appreciate you listening to another episode of Locked On Falcons Podcast. If you want to provide your feedback to any of the things I talked about on today or for future episodes or for future Q&As that we probably will be doing in the very near future, you can send in your comments, your questions, your feedback to the show's social media pages, which is on Twitter and Facebook, both at Locked On Falcons. You can also send an email if you hate social media, and that email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And you can leave a comment at falcfans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. If you didn't see my mock draft, it's up there on falcfans.com. You can also check out the latest draft interest, who the players of the Falcons have shown interest in, what pro days they've been visiting over the last couple of days, as well as at falcfans.com. And there you go, guys. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.